Hello everyone and welcome to Hydro One's virtual community open house for the Longwood to Lakeshore transmission project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and joined by hundreds of residents listening in. During tonight's session, you will hear from Hydro One's team and have an opportunity to participate in a live Q&A session. To ask a question live this evening, simply press 3 on your phone's keypad. Once again, press 3 to ask a question at any time. To view tonight's presentation, please visit www.longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, where you can also submit a question online. My name is Eric and I will be facilitating the community open house tonight. Our intention is to get as many questions from you as possible. You can ask a question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. For those of you following along online, you can also submit a question using the question submission box. For those just joining us, we want to welcome everyone to Hydro One's virtual community open house for the Longwood to Lakeshore transition project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and joined by hundreds of residents listening in. During tonight's session, you will hear from Hydro One's team and have an opportunity to participate in a live Q&A session. We want to remind everyone again, you can ask a live question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. You can also view tonight's presentation at www.longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, where you can also submit questions via the question submission box. Media are welcome to listen to tonight's virtual discussion and can follow up with Hydro One's media relations team at media.relations@hydroone.com with any questions. At this time, I would like to introduce Malika, a manager of community relations at Hydro One, to open this evening's discussion. Welcome, Malika.
Thank you, Eric. Before we get started, we'd like to begin tonight with a land acknowledgement. Hydro One acknowledges that the Longwood to Lakeshore project is proposed on the ancestral lands of the Anishinaabe and is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. Hydro One understands that Indigenous nations have been here since time immemorial and are stewards of what many refer to as Turtle Island. We are all treaty people, and with a commitment to friendship and our pursuit of reconciliation, we are thankful to be welcomed on these lands as partners in our shared future so we can improve on our past and energize our combined futures. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Malika Kara, Manager of Community Relations for Hydro One, and I'll be your MC for this evening. I'm joined by my colleagues on our Hydro One project team, as well as the Independent Electricity System Operator, or the ISO. Please welcome Craig Pruitt, Hydro One's Manager of Strategic Projects, Paul Dalmazzi, a Senior Staff Member from Environmental Services, Kyle Ellis from our Real Estate team, Kelly Williams, who leads our work with Indigenous communities in the Southwest, and Candida DaCosta, a Senior Transmission Planning Engineer with the ISO. We're going to start tonight by giving you some background on the Longwood to Lakeshore project, including the need for the project and its role within the broader regional network of transmission in Southwest Ontario. Where we are at with the environmental assessment, look at the three route alternatives that have been released, along with the variations for public input and how this input is being considered as part of our route evaluation process. We're going to move fairly quickly through this information because we'd like to use most of our time tonight for your questions. Many of you have submitted questions in advance, and we'll be using those to kick off our discussion tonight. If you haven't submitted a question yet or think of one as we're going through the presentation, you can ask anytime by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. If you're online, you can click on the Submit a Question box. There are several partners involved in the development of this project. Let's take a minute to talk about their key roles. Hydro One is Ontario's largest electricity transmission and distribution service provider. We distribute electricity across Ontario to nearly 1.5 million predominantly rural customers, or approximately 26% of the total number of customers in Ontario. The Independent Electricity System Operator provides day-to-day management of Ontario's power system and plans for the province's future energy needs. Thank you to Candida DaCosta from the ISO for joining us tonight. The Provincial Ministry of the Environment, Conservation and Parks provides legislative oversight for the environmental assessments that underpin Hydro One's project planning process. The Ontario Energy Board, or OEB, is the regulatory authority for the electricity sector. Hydro One must submit applications for rates, projects, acquisitions, and operations to the OEB for approval. Just a reminder, those on the phone can ask a question at any time by pressing 3 on their keypad. Those online can click on the Submit a Question box. Transmission infrastructure, such as the two transmission lines included in this project, is how power gets moved from the generation sources, an example of which is OPG's Sir Adam Beck Generating Station in Niagara Falls, through to transformer stations, to local distribution companies, including Hydro One, that deliver power to homes and businesses across the province. Demand for electricity in Southwest Ontario is expected to quadruple by 2035. The Longwood to Lakeshore project, shown on this regional map as lines 3 and 4, is part of a network of new transmission infrastructure that is under construction, under development, or still to be developed to meet this growing demand. In the interest of time, we won't go through each of these other projects tonight, but you can learn more about our progress by visiting Hydro One's website. Let's take a quick look back at how we got to where we are today. In the fall of 2021, the ISO identified the need for one single circuit 500 kilovolt transmission line between Longwood Transformer Station, or TS, in the municipality of Strathroy-Caradoc, and the Lakeshore TS in the municipality of Lakeshore to be in service by 2030 or sooner. Then, in the spring of 2022, recognizing the significant and growing demand across the region, the Government of Ontario advised Hydro One to conduct early development work on a second Longwood to Lakeshore transmission line. This allows for more efficient planning as well as more meaningful and transparent consultations with Indigenous communities, residents, municipalities, and stakeholders, while the ISO further assesses the future energy needs of the region. In early 2023, Hydro One began planning activities for the Longwood to Lakeshore project, including issuing a notice of commencement of a comprehensive environmental assessment, or EA, and engagement. Many members of communities across the region joined us for in-person and virtual events where we introduced the project. The insights you shared, along with information from Indigenous communities, municipalities, conservation authorities, farming associations, and others, in addition to field studies and data gathering, was used to help develop the route alternatives for the project. Earlier this year, the Government of Ontario announced changes to modernize environmental assessments that meant the Longwood to Lakeshore project would be moving forward as a Class EA. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Paul Dalmazzi from Hydro One's Environmental Service team to tell us a little bit more about that.
Thanks, Malika. An environmental assessment, or EA, is a regulated decision-making tool and a key step for the planning and building of transmission infrastructure in Ontario. A comprehensive or individual EA is prepared according to the province's environmental legislation for large-scale complex projects where the effects are often not fully known or predictable and requires a project-specific terms of reference which outlines how the EA would be completed. Under the Class EA process, the requirements for the EA are standardized and documented in the applicable Class EA document, in this case the Class EA, Class Environmental Assessment for Transmission Facilities. Following completion of the Class EA process, including a public comment period on the Draft Environmental Study Report, or ESR, the project may proceed as outlined in the final environmental study report. Both types of EAs include studying and characterizing the environment within the project study area, identifying and evaluating viable alternative methods of meeting the need for the project, so in this case, the route alternative, as well as consultation with stakeholders, rights holders, in assessing potential environmental and documenting all of the above into a report that is made publicly available. Undertaking a Class EA for this project will reduce the expected timeline for the EA and ensure the critical infrastructure is in service when it is required to support the anticipated increase in energy demand in the region. All of the insights shared through the initial engagement in 2023 helped inform the development of the route alternative. That input helped us identify constraints and opportunities for potential routes. Just a reminder, each of the potential routes that we'll show tonight and have showed previously include two transmission lines running in parallel. We also met with indigenous communities, government agencies, municipal staff, and interest groups with local knowledge to help establish a set of routing criteria. Those criteria were incorporated into a geographic information system, or GIS, a computer model, to develop preliminary route alternatives, which help us refine down our large study area into some smaller areas that we can refine based on technical review, stakeholder input, and lessons learned from Hydro One's other projects in the area. As soon as we shared the route alternatives publicly, or on March 5th, we began gathering input and feedback on the specific properties and features along the routes, as well as on the criteria that will be important to consider in evaluating them and ultimately selecting the preferred route. This process is something that we'll be continuing throughout the rest of this year. So again, the project consists of two new single circuit 500 kilovolts or KV transmission lines, approximately 135 kilometers in length. Each of the lines on the main part of the map represents two transmission lines, just to be clear. Again, these two lines will run in parallel on adjacent right-of-ways, with the exception of a portion of Route 3 near the Longwood Station. Note that each route alternative identified in the map, again, includes two 500 kV transmission lines. Alternative 1, shown on this map in red, parallels an existing double-circuit 230 kilovolt transmission line for much of its route, except near the two ends and an approximately 20-kilometer detour around Chatham, which are greenfield portions. West of Chatham, Alternative 1 splits into two route variations. Alternative 2, shown on the map in yellow, follows a greenfield alignment for approximately 40 kilometers southwest from the Longwood Transformer Station before joining with Alternative 1 to parallel the existing double-circuit 230 kilovolt transmission line. West of Chatham, Alternative 2 also splits into the same two variations as Route 1. Alternative 3, shown on the map in purple, follows a more northern alignment for the majority of the route, paralleling existing infrastructure for approximately one-third of the route, with the remaining two-thirds being greenfield alignment. East of Tilbury, Alternative 3 diverges into three route variations for the remainder of the route into the Lakeshore Transformer Station. Many property owners and community members have shared their initial feedback about the effects, pros and cons of each of these routes, and their variations, and we'll be continuing to collect that input throughout the year. In addition to comments we receive from the community and information that we collect from existing reports, plans, maps, and other sources, Hydro One will also be conducting field studies over the next year to further help inform our route evaluation. Field studies will primarily focus on characterizing the natural environment through things like ecological land classification and vegetation inventory, breeding bird surveys, and aquatic habitat assessments. In addition to the natural environment surveys, we'll also be conducting other studies and research, some examples being a stage one archaeological assessment, cultural heritage existing condition study, as well as reviewing things like water well records, water protection areas and policies, municipal official plans, and of course, continuing to consult directly with municipalities, indigenous communities, agencies, landowners, and the public to learn more about the local environment along the route alternative. Over the next few months, we'll be contacting some property owners to request property access so our teams can complete these initial non-intrusive field studies on properties with environmental areas or features of interest identified along the different route alternatives. All of that input and information that we're collecting will be sorted into project-specific evaluation criteria in four categories that we will be using to evaluate the route alternatives and ultimately select the preferred route. Again, each of these categories will include a number of different evaluation criteria. The categories are socioeconomic environment, which, for example, includes effects to farming operations and residential properties. The natural environment, which includes criteria that will capture effects to vegetation, wildlife habitats, and wetlands. Indigenous culture, values, and land use category, which is used to capture input from indigenous communities on areas of importance, such as those that support hunting or fishing activities, and technical and cost considerations. which include things like the total length of the line, complexity of construction, and costs associated with acquiring land rights for the new transmission line. With that, I'll pass it over to my colleague, Craig.
Thanks, Paul. I wanted to talk a little bit about the project development timeline here. So really, the information gathering and engagement will continue for the rest of this year. And that information, as Paul mentioned, is going to be incorporated into the evaluation process for the different routes alternatives. So we'll continue on with that evaluation process. And then in early 2025, Hydro One will share the result of this evaluation of the route alternatives and announce the preferred route. Following that announcement, we will continue engagement and with a more specific and greater focus on the individual features along that selected route, as well as the mitigation strategies where required to minimize effects to those individual features along the preferred route. All of this information, the mitigations and the route selection, the process and the engagement will be documented in the draft environmental study report for the project, which will be released for public review and comments in the middle of that year. And at this point, we are looking to complete the design and the approvals in 2025 and 2026 with the start of construction around 2027. The goal will be having the line in service by 2030. Malika.
Thank you. I want to thank both Paul and Craig for the overview. I hope that gave everyone a good update on where we are at with the project. We'd now like to open it up to questions.
Thank you, Malika. We're going to get to the Q&A portion of the event. I want to quickly remind everyone how they can ask a question at any time. Simply press 3 on your phone's keypad if you're joining us via the phone. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. For everyone following along online at www.longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, there is a question submission box that you'll be able to submit a question using that as well. So again, press 3 if you're joining us on phone, or if you're joining us online, use the question submission box to submit a question. Up first, we have a live question, and it's Roger who's joining us. Roger, welcome. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes. I was wondering about another route for the transmission lines. I've looked at some maps, and I've realized that there's the abandoned Kansas Southern Railway line that goes, pretty close at the starting point near Melbourne, and it ends up in Windsor, but it goes right by Lakeshore area. So I was wondering if that has been considered as a route.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Maybe I can take a swing at answering that, maybe before passing it over to my colleague, Craig. So the short answer is yes, this was something that we looked at early on, utilizing existing rights of ways. Infrastructure is something that we consider when developing new transmission line projects, as this can have certain advantages. However, the objective of identifying these routes is to select a route that balances all of these features in the environment. So with that in mind, all of our route alternatives parallel or make some use of existing transmission right-of-ways for at least a portion of the route, and that's, largely based on feedback that we've received, again, early on in this project. As we were, developing these route alternatives, that abandoned rail corridor was something we considered. But ultimately, we decided not to carry that forward because it stood out as being less desirable based on a number of factors, including a longer length, higher associated cost, a larger number of buildings and structures that would be within that new right-of-way, and some additional natural features and vegetation that have grown up around that. And just to clarify, that rail corridor is quite a bit smaller than the new right-of-way that we would need to construct and maintain, certainly for the two new transmission lines. So it was something we considered. Ultimately, the team found that some of the features along that route and the I'll call it the disadvantages outweighed any advantages that we saw from being able to use that, especially given the disparity in size between the two. And maybe, Craig, I'll ask if there's anything else I missed that you want to add to that one.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. No, I think you covered quite a lot there. I think just to go back and reiterate on the main point that you raised, we did look at lots of different linear infrastructure in the area to assess its suitability for becoming a potential route. And on those, on that infrastructure, we then had to overlay the known constraints that we found from environmental purposes or other issues or challenges, technical challenges on the project. And that's really what was driving these three routes or these routes and their alternative, the small deviations that we've landed on at the moment. So we certainly did start with, if we go back to the study area approach that was presented in one of the very first open houses, we did take stock of all of the available linear long corridor infrastructure that we could potentially have paralleled. And as you say, Paul, where we can and where it worked with other technical and environmental challenges or constraints or features, we've incorporated those on the route alternatives presented.
Roger, thank you very much for that question. Now, I do want to quickly remind everyone how they can ask a question by simply pressing 3 on your phone's keypad to ask a live question, or use the question submission box if you're joining us online to submit a question. Now, we did have some questions that were submitted previous to the event, and I'm going to go to the first one. It looks like almost all of the routes will have significant impacts to farms. How do you evaluate impacts to agricultural operations?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Effects to agricultural operations are top of mind for this project team, especially given the environment we're working in, just given the sheer amount of prime farmland in southwestern Ontario. I don't think it's possible to construct a new 135-kilometer transmission line in this part of the province without traversing a large amount of farmland. But we've, over the years of planning this and some other projects in the region, we've had a lot of opportunity to learn about farming operations, from members of the agricultural community, and including the opportunity to see firsthand the size of modern day farming equipment, learn about the importance of tile drainage, municipal drain, and all of that infrastructure and how it supports the agricultural land base. One thing I do want to point out, it's important to note the majority of agricultural land uses are compatible with overhead transmission lines. That is to say, activities like cash crop farming, livestock pasture, will still be able to occur within the right-of-way once the lines have been constructed. However, we recognize that while agriculture is a compatible use, there can still be effects to these activities. For example, through construction, and that is what we plan to assess through the EA. So the question, going back to the question, how do you evaluate impacts to those agricultural operations? The most important thing to keep in mind with any aspect of a route evaluation like this is that the criteria that we use must be able to be applied fairly and consistently to all the route alternatives and along the entire length of these route alternatives, the whole 135 kilometers. So for example, and again, I'm pulling from some of our recent transmission line projects in southwestern Ontario, where we also had evaluations of some very different, very diverse route alternatives. How did we look at effects to agricultural lands and operations? And generally, we considered three things. The first being the amount of net new prime agricultural lands within a transmission line right-of-way that they were not on an existing transmission line right-of-way prior to the project. The relative or approximate extent of net new transmission towers on prime agricultural lands, as well as effects to agricultural outbuildings, such as, you know, barns, silos, et cetera, which is really essentially means where structures are within the new rights of way. These are all things that we can apply fairly to all the different route alternatives and along their entire length. And also, I think, can help us, capture a lot of the concerns we've heard relating to things like, potential effects such as soil compaction, effects to tile drainage, temporary disruption from construction and maintenance, and, of course, the difficulty of maneuvering modern farming equipment around transmission towers. So that said, that's an example of how we have captured and evaluated those effects, again, fairly in the past. Every project for us is a listening and learning experience. And we're always more than happy to receive new input and suggestions and hear new ideas on how we can assess whether it's agricultural effects or other effects captured in other criteria for the Longwood to Lakeshore project. And that's, a big part of what we're out to do over the rest of this year, is to have those conversations, listen to those, concerns and input. As long as we can still fairly apply those evaluation criteria equally to all the route alternatives, then we're open to having that discussion. Thank you for the question.
We have another few questions coming up. A quick reminder to everyone joining us, press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question. You can also submit a question online if you're joining us at www.longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com. There's a question submission box you can use to submit questions online if you're joining us there. Another question that was submitted before the event is regarding how big of a corridor will Hydro One be acquiring, and what will the towers look like?
I'll take that question. Thanks so much. Craig Pruitt again speaking. It's a great question. When we develop the projects and calculate the width of the corridor, that is actually done on the basis of a number of different factors around how high the towers are, the amount of conductor, the length between the towers, and so on. But there is some reasonable approximations that we start with at this earlier stage in the design and project development process. So at this point, we're suggesting that, or assuming, I should say, that the right-of-way would be approximately 60 meters wide, so around about 200 feet. The towers are going to be right in the middle of that. And the right-of-way is a notional dimension, so it's a width that the conductors may swing out by in the very middle of the span when the wind blows and pushes them over. And so we calculate that and incorporate that distance into our property acquisition so that it's clear how far our conductors may be outside of the line of the towers, and people have a clear understanding of what our infrastructure is going to be. Also, I think it's probably helpful for me just to remind everybody that, again, it's two parallel lines. So that means there are two lines running right next to each other. And each one of these right-of-way widths would be 60 meters wide. So towers in the middle again, and then 30 meters on the center line. If you stood in the middle of the tower underneath it, it'd be 30 meters on either side is the right-of-way that we would be looking to acquire for each line in total. So a total of 120 meters. The towers are going to be somewhere around 35 to 45 meters tall, to give you, again, a feel of how large they may be. And on average, the distance between the towers is going to be somewhere around 300 to 350 meters. Again, we have to calculate all of this once we get to the design stage and we have selected the specific route. There's lots of, as you can imagine, lots of constraints, different things we have to cross over, corners we have to turn that can change the distance between the towers and perhaps the height of the towers as we cross over roads or other infrastructure as well. But I just wanted to give everybody some context of the approximate size. Hopefully that answered the question.
Up next, we have an online question. This was submitted at longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com using the question submission box. It's Mark who has a question. Mark's question is, why are there more lines now than the original plans?
Thanks, Eric. Maybe I can take that. It's Candida from the ISO. Just to set some context, the ISO is the provincial agency that's responsible for the reliability of the electricity system. So we prepare the system for the future by kind of ensuring that there's enough generation and transmission to meet the needs of the customers. So we conduct routine planning both at the regional and provincial level or bulk level to identify when new transmission is needed. And what we found is that the growth here in the Southwest is just so great that you need all of the previously recommended transmission and generation as well as this line to meet the needs of the area. So for a bit of background, we have made a number of recommendations, and it's really run the gambit of all the tools that we have at our disposal. So it includes recommendations for new generation, conservation and demand management measures, as well as transmission recommendations, which includes a new switching station at Lakeshore and three new sets of transmission lines. And this Longwood to Lakeshore line is just the latest in that series of recommendations. And really all of those are required in order to meet the growing demand in southwestern Ontario. So hopefully that answers your question. Here.
Mark, thank you for that question. Up next, we have another live question. And again, a quick reminder, if you are joining us live on the phone, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad to ask a live question. Up next, we have Bert, who's joining us now with a live question. Bert, welcome. Hi, Bert. You're joining us live on the line. Please go ahead with your question. Hi, Bert. Welcome. You're live. Please go ahead. Okay, thanks, Bert. We'll try and get you back in just a moment to ask your question. In the meanwhile, I do want to remind everyone joining us that you can ask a live question by simply pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. If you're following us along online, you can also submit a question using the question submission box. Up next, we have David, who's joining us live. David, welcome. Please go ahead. Hi, David. Welcome. You're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Yes, there are two different aspects to an ESR. One is the short-term environmental impacts from construction activities, and the other is the long-term effects of the route selected and the permanent installation. Will the ESR differentiate between these two and identify mitigating measures for the construction activities?
Thank you for the question. That's a great question. I appreciate the shout out to the ESR. The short answer is yes. The ESR considers both the short term or temporary effects of a project, which are largely associated with construction, sometimes intermittent maintenance activities, as well as those longer term effects of having the new transmission line on the landscape. Just to clarify for others that maybe missed that acronym, ESR is the Environmental Study Report, which is the culminating document from the environmental assessment, the Class EA. And this document will be released as the draft ESR for a public comment period at the end of the Class EA process. So in that ESR, we'll have documented all of the consultation undertaken, the identification and evaluation of the route alternative, as well as an assessment of the environmental effects of the preferred route and some mitigation strategies to address them. And again, going back to the question, that does include both the short-term effects, which includes things like disruption from construction. So for agricultural fields, that could be temporary croplands out of production. It could be temporary noise and dust nuisance. It could be potentially some soil compaction as a result of having things like temporary access roads on farm fields, and the mitigation strategy would be how we would alleviate that, work with the farmer maybe to disc that field at the end of the day after the temporary road has been lifted. So those are some examples of some of the short-term construction effects. Examples of some of the long-term effects, one that I'll always use as an example is effects to vegetation. So with overhead transmission, you'll often hear us at Hydro One talk about compatible and incompatible vegetation. Incompatible vegetation being things like tall trees that would grow up at maturity, risk contact with the overhead transmission lines, and cause reliability and safety issues. That said, there are compatible vegetation communities, the lower growing shrubs and meadow communities. So one example of a long-term effect from a transmission line, say through a woodlot, we would have to remove the incompatible vegetation, so the trees, and there are some short-term effects with that as well associated with just that activity in and of itself. Longer term, what we would seek to do is to transition that woodlot within the right-of-way from that incompatible vegetation community to a compatible vegetation community. So what does that look like? It means if there is a woodlot, or a hedgerow, within that right-of-way, that after construction, we would seek to restore that with some compatible, say, shrub plantings that at maturity would not risk approaching the overhead transmission lines. But that would be a long-term change in that vegetation community. Over time, we have to maintain the vegetation along our transmission lines to keep them safe, keep them reliable. There would be a change to that feature in that case. So that hopefully gives an example of, or a couple examples of some short-term construction effects versus some longer-term effects from having a right-of-way, in this case, through a woodlot. And again, to answer the question, yes, both of those are considered and will be discussed in the environmental study report. And the last thing I'll end with there is, that's also those discussions around potential effects, potential mitigation strategies. That's another part of what we are out here to consult about and to have those discussions, whether it's with Indigenous communities, government agencies, or with landowners directly. That will obviously pick up in focus once we select our preferred route, but even discussing some of those potential effects now can help us in the evaluation stage. So those are discussions that we are really have already started to have, but are certainly hoping to continue throughout the rest of this environmental assessment. So thank you very much for the question, and I'll pass it back.
David, thank you again for that live question. And now a quick reminder to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question and you're joining us by phone. If you're at longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, you can submit a question online. Up next, we have Ron with a live question. Ron, welcome. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question regarding line number 3. It appears on the map that I'm looking at anyway, it follows at least probably 5/8 of the line is over top of the existing transmission lines. And the map I see is not very detailed, so it's hard to tell where it actually stops and starts. But how do you know when it affects your own property?
Yeah,
Yeah, thanks for that question. I appreciate it. So I think there's a couple of different ways for individual property owners to go and check whether one of the proposed alternatives actually affects their property. I realize that the scale of the overall line map is very large and difficult to pinpoint individual properties. So we do have an interactive map on the website where you, similar to kind of Google Earth, where you can go and either enter your specific property address and it will take you right there. Or you can start at the high scale and looking at the overall line and essentially zoom in until you've seen the area of interest that you wanted to look at, be it your property or some other area of interest that you may want to tell us about, provide us information on, ensure that we fully understand what exists out there on the ground. So I would definitely point you or anybody towards the interactive map on the website that allows you to get to a very fine resolution and to see exactly where each one of the lines are proposed to be.
Ron, thank you very much for that question. Up next, we have another live question. Again, it's press 3 on your phone's keypad if you have a live question you'd like to ask. We're going now to Kathy, who's joining us live. Kathy, welcome.
I was just wondering, how does this affect Thamesville? I live in the village of Thamesville.
Thank you for the question. And again, maybe just to follow on the last response from my colleague Craig, if anybody is interested in seeing these route alternatives in a bit more detail, certainly than the high level map that we had up earlier in the presentation, we do have some great maps and tools on the website for the project, and including that interactive map. So to answer your question, these lines do, ultimately all of the route alternatives have to get from the Longwood Transformer Station in Strathroy Caradoc down to the Lakeshore Transformer Station in the municipality of Lakeshore, County of Essex. I believe that Route 3 is the northernmost route, is the closest to the community of Thamesville. I don't know the exact distance off the top of my head, but you can see that for yourself on the interactive map. The only thing I will say is, when we were developing these route alternatives, obviously, we're looking at constraint, both opportunities and constraints. One of those constraints is dense residential areas, built-up areas, such as communities like Thamesville. So, some of the routes, and again, I think off the top of my head, Route 3 being most proximate, might are nearby Thamesville, and we actually had one of our open houses there. But we did avoid certainly the more built-up area. And again, if anyone wants more of a detailed look at the route alternatives, some great tools on the project website. Thank you.
Kathy, thank you again for that question. Up next, we have a question that was previously submitted from the event. This question is as follows. How much does Hydro One offer for its property requirements, and what are you looking to purchase? Is the width of a is it the width of a tower or the entire corridor?
Yes, a question. This is Kyle Ellis with Hydro One Real Estate. Good question. So once a preferred route is selected for the project, Hydro One will produce a project-specific acquisition program. We refer to this as our land acquisition compensation principles. And so with this, our goal will be to secure voluntary property settlements utilizing our project-specific land acquisition compensation principles that will guide our voluntary land rights acquisition with all affected property owners. This process will include a site-specific independent third-party appraisal, which will set the market value of the required land rights. So through our acquisition program, we'll apply compensation incentives built off of the market value determined by the third-party appraiser, which will lead to offers for land rights that are beyond market value. I would like to note that the land rights that we're requiring for the project will be for the right-of-way. As mentioned earlier, the typical right-of-way for a 500 kV transmission line is approximately 60 meters or 200 feet wide. So this is the area that we'll be looking to acquire land rights for, and we're looking to typically acquire easement rights for the right-of-way. As we continue through the project planning and ultimately selecting a preferred route, our real estate team will be working one-on-one with property owners that are affected by the preferred route to acquire the land rights required for the project. So we're early on in the project life cycle right now for those types of engagements. So once we have a preferred route selected, the real estate team will be working one-on-one with those impacted property owners and walking them through the land acquisition program that we will be applying. So I hope that answers the question and provides you some clarity.
Up next, we have an online question, and just a quick reminder to everyone joining us, if you are joining us on longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, you can submit a question using the question submission box. If you're joining us by phone, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time, and someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Up next is an online question from Sharon. Sharon's question is, how do we know if our property is affected by these lines?
Thank you for that question. It's Malika Cara, Manager of Community Relations here. I'll build off the responses from my colleagues Paul and Craig earlier tonight and reference the interactive map on the project website. I'd encourage all to visit the map and learn more about the route alternatives and where they traverse. Further to that, in terms of specific outreach, we have connected directly with property owners along the route alternatives. We did that through in-person door knocking and also by registered mail for those who are unable to reach in person. We have been and will continue holding several engagement opportunities to collect input and feedback. Public notices about significant project milestones and community open houses will be delivered to homes and businesses across the study area and along the route alternatives by Canada Post. Any unaddressed ad mail, and we will also be emailing the project contact list. In addition, we also have newspaper postings, radio ads, social media, things of that nature to notify all within the study area of any consultation activities. As part of sharing the route alternatives, we've reached out to all potentially impacted property owners, again, through in-person door knocking or registered mail. Once the preferred route has been selected, a dedicated real estate representative is assigned to work directly with each landowner. And just to wrap that all up, we also have a dedicated project website, which includes the latest project information and ways to get in touch with us at any time. So if you do have any clarification required, feel free to reach out to us, and we can help identify whether or not you are affected by the line if there is any confusion in that regard. Back over to you, Eric.
Sharon, thank you again for that question. Our next online question was submitted by Earl. And Earl's question is as follows. I understand there are two lines in the project to be built. Will the right-of-way areas be adjoining? Will the right-of-way areas be adjoining? Or will right-of-way of the first line be assembled and the second line at a later time? Is it possible that lines may be on separate routes?
Thanks, Eric. I take that. Hi, everybody. It's Craig Pruitt again, Manager of Strategic Projects. That's a really great question. I'm glad that we're referring back to this again. I think it's an important point here. So yes, there are two lines to be built on the project. As I'd mentioned previously, they will be parallel or adjoining, abutting for the large majority of all of the routes. Just looking at the online map, you'll see there's a small section on line 3, where the two lines, line 1 and line 2, aren't adjoining or abutting, but for the rest of it, it is. So to answer the second part of the question here around the timing and whether they may be on separate routes, no, they wouldn't be on separate routes. The route that would be selected is being selected to hold both lines, the first one that we're building, as well as the future line. So hopefully that provides that information you're looking for. Thanks, Eric.
And Earl, thank you again for that question. Just again, a quick reminder, if you're joining us on longwoodtolakeshoreopenhouse.com, you can use the question submission box to submit a question of your very own. Up next is another online question. This one was from Magdalena. Magdalena's question is as follows. There is no doubt that a transmission line crossing a field will reduce the value of the land. How will you compensate for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's Kyle Ellis again from Real Estate. As mentioned earlier, as part of the acquisition program, there will be a site-specific independent third-party appraisal that will set the market value of the required land rights. Within that appraisal as well, they will determine if there is a reduction of market value to the remainder of the property from Hydro One's use and interest in the property. This is what's referred to as injurious affection. So the appraiser will complete an injurious affection analysis and consider various attributes of the subject property as well as the transmission line, including the distances between transmission line to a residence or where that transmission line crosses that particular property. And from this third party appraisal, it will be determined if a loss of value will result from that transmission line. Again, we refer to that as injurious affection. So compensation for the loss of property value will be considered within our land acquisition program and will be determined by a third party appraiser. So I hope that answers your question.
Magdalena, thank you again for submitting that question online. If you're joining us by phone, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad and someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Up next is a question that was submitted previous to the event, and the question is as follows. If a totally new route is used, why not place it on the existing field boundaries, and why can't you avoid taking out people's homes?
Thanks, Eric. It's Craig again. I'll take this one. Appreciate it. So I think firstly, just recognition here from Hydro One that determining where to build a new transmission line is a complex and never easy process, and nor is it a decision that we take lightly. You know, I think this question here around placing it along existing field boundaries is an interesting ask, and I think feeds into the importance of collecting information from the landowners and the stakeholders and indigenous communities that are along these right-of-ways or potential right-of-ways. One good example here is in some early conversations we had with landowners, there was a question about putting the lines up against the boundary lines of the properties. And when we got into more detailed discussion with the farmers and the landowners, they actually preferred us to set the towers back away from the edge of the property so that they could get the farming equipment between the edge of the field and the tower. And then essentially we weren't creating such a difficult position for them to utilize their equipment on. So, I think this goes back to the importance of us and this outreach and stakeholdering and engagement process for us to collect that type of information from the landowners, from the municipalities, other stakeholders on the project, indigenous communities, so we can feed that type of detailed information into both the route analysis process as well as the detailed design process that follows later on. So hopefully that answered the question there, and I'll pass it back to you, Eric. Thank you.
Up next, we have another live question, and it's Ainsley who's joining us now. Ainsley, welcome. Please go ahead.
Hi. I live in Morpeth. I'm right across from the village on Hill Road, and my farm also borders number 3 highway. And then there's a graveyard opposite the my field. And it heads into the Klondike. I don't see how you could build a tower going through Morpeth. The height of the trees here is enormous, 90 to 100 feet, some of them, especially on my property. And then I've just put in a whole lot of new tile recently in the last 3 or 4 years on my land. I don't see how you can go across the village of Morpeth. I go right up to the cart mill, and there's even houses there. So I I couldn't see by the map that we're affected. Is that correct?
So thank you for the question. Again, just to reiterate for everybody, if you're looking to confirm the exact location of the route alternatives, we have some great tools on our project website, particularly an interactive map. So to answer that specific question about your property, that's one I'd have to take a closer look at in probably a bit more time than we have here tonight. That tool is there for anyone to use. If you still find that you'd like some more information, the project team is always available to reach out and discuss properties specifically. I'll also use this opportunity to reiterate that what is on that interactive map right now, those three different routes and their variations. Those are route alternatives that we are still studying and still evaluating. Input like was just given is exactly the type of input that we're looking for at this stage because that helps us, do that fair and holistic evaluation of the route alternatives in order to select the preferred. So again, the preferred route has not been selected yet. We are still at the stage of studying and evaluating three route alternatives and their variations. We currently anticipate announcing the selection of the preferred route early in 2025. And the reason for that is that, again, going back to my colleague Craig's last answer, we understand how big a decision this is. And that there's no way to build this transmission line without affecting something and some properties. And that's why we're trying to take as much care as we can to make sure that in that evaluation of the route, that we look at all of these features, all of these criteria that we can apply and to make sure that decision is made fairly and transparently so that when we do select that preferred route, in just under a year, that we can explain that and justify that and show how that evaluation was done and that decision was made. So again, information on specific features to the property, on your property or every area, information or suggestions or input on evaluation criteria of importance, the relative importance of those evaluation criteria. Those are all things that we are hoping to hear about and discussions that we're hoping to have over the next year to help inform us in making that selection and to make that decision in as fair and as transparent a manner as we can for a new infrastructure project of this size. So again, I thank you for the question. For more specifics, lots of tools on the website. And of course, our project team is always available to discuss individual properties. But I thank you for that question tonight.
Ainsley, thank you again for that question. This is another question coming up now that was submitted before the event. And the question is, where is the power that will be transmitted by this project generated?
Thanks. I can take that. It's Candida from the ISO. So Ontario has a largely clean electricity grid with a variety of resources, including hydro generation, nuclear, natural gas, and renewables. And all of those resources are plugged into the interconnected transmission network. So you can almost think of the transmission network like a body of water. There are multiple rivers, creeks, and precipitation sources that feed into Lake Ontario, for example, and they all mix together. So if you were to take a bucket of water from the lake, it would be kind of impossible to know where those specific water droplets came from. And that's not really under our control. So kind of similarly with the electricity system, the source of the power on a particular circuit is not controlled, but it's really just a mixture of all the resources that are connected to the system at that time. Generally speaking, in Ontario, the base load power is from nuclear and hydro plants, since they provide kind of a steady supply of electricity. But as demand rises and falls, more flexible forms of electricity generation are used, such as some of the smaller hydrodams, as well as the natural gas plants, since they're able to adjust their output more quickly to meet the demand. And one thing I would add is that the ISO is also in the process of procuring additional generation across the province through a series of competitive procurements. And that's going to just expand and change the supply mix in response to the growth in electricity demand across the province. So overall, there's like a diverse mix, and that helps us ensure that there is a reliable and affordable supply of electricity.
Up next, we have a live question, and it's Mike who's joining us live now. Mike, welcome. Please go ahead.
Chairman,
I'll be
Mike.
Yeah, hi, Mike. You're on your phone.
That's you, Mike. You've gone before.
I'm coming closer.
Yeah. Yeah, hi, Mike. You're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Yes, how are you doing? I just wondering how is the landowner compensated? And do they pay the legal bills fees?
Yes. Thanks for the question. I can refer back to some of the insights I provided earlier. So once a preferred route is selected, we will produce a project-specific acquisition program. Again, we refer to this as our land acquisition compensation principles, and this is what we will use to, in an effort to acquire land rights voluntarily with all affected property owners. We will be utilizing a site-specific independent third-party appraisal, which will set the market value for the acquired land rights. Through our acquisition program, we also apply compensation incentives that will be built off of the market value, which will lead to offers for the land rights that are above the market value that's established by that appraisal. So I hope that answers your question on how the compensation is determined. In reference to the legal fees, so in Hydro One's past experiences within our previous projects, land acquisition compensation principles, we have covered legal fees that are associated with the review of legal agreements that Hydro One is presenting to property owners, as well as the closing legal fees that do come about from closing real estate transactions. So in short, we do cover legal fees, reasonable legal fees, that do arise from the land acquisition program that Hydro One is presenting to property owners. I hope that answers your question.
Mike, thank you for your questions. Now, we're actually just about reaching the end of our virtual live discussion. Malika, with the couple minutes remaining, did you want to share some closing remarks with local residents?
Thank you, Eric. As we close out this evening's discussion, I want to thank everyone for joining and encourage you to connect with us by emailing or calling our community relations team. We will also follow up with those who submitted any questions by phone or email directly, as well as post tonight's live discussion to our website in the coming days. Again, I want to thank everyone for their time and their thoughtful questions. I also want to thank the Hydro One staff who participated and shared some information this evening. For any further information, I want to encourage everyone to please visit us online at hydroone.com/Longwood to Lakeshore. We thank you again for joining us this evening. Over to you, Eric.
Thanks again to everyone for joining us. And as mentioned, if we did not get to your submitted question tonight, we will follow up with you in the coming weeks. You can also contact us at community.relations@hydroone.com. or by calling 1-877-345-6799. Thank you again to everyone for joining us this evening, and have a good night.